So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Aero. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing, even when I don't. And I like the sound of starting my own business, Walton Goggins Goggle Glasses. But I'm an actor. I don't know what I'm doing. I needed help. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. I didn't even realize I needed a social media calendar. GoDaddy Aero will take your idea that sounds good and make a business that looks like you know what you're doing. GoDaddy Aero can get your business up and running in minutes. You know what that sounds like? It sounds like a plan. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Aero. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This program is paid for by Advocacy United. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Advocacy United or its guests and do not reflect the views of WPHT or Odyssey. Today's program is pre-recorded.
Consider a career with the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers. As a Boilermaker apprentice, you'll earn while you learn. We offer excellent wages and benefits. And as part of our no-cost, hands-on apprenticeship program, you'll learn from the best in state-of-the-art training centers and on the job. Become a union Boilermaker and get on your way to a great career.
Visit Boilermakers.org or call 844-IBB-WELD.
And guess where this additional billion gallons of biofuel is going to come from? Going to come from abroad. That's not an American First energy policy. We're in this together. Labor's in this. Building trades are in this. Refiners are in this. American consumers need us to do this too.
Now across the Jacob Media Network, welcome to the Labor and Energy Show special, exclusively presented by the PBF Energy Paulsboro Refinery and the PBF Delaware City Refinery, in collaboration with the labor unions that build our communities.
If you fix this RINs issue, you're looking at a reduction of 25 to 30 cents a gallon.
This is the Labor and Energy Show, bringing labor leaders, national experts, and political influencers together to educate you about fancy terms like RINs and RGGI, while explaining the truth about energy independence. Welcome to the Labor and Energy Show with J. Doc and Krause.
The special edition of the Labor and Energy Show with J. Doc and Krause, and we welcome everyone in as we bring you this broadcast in the week or the memory of 9/11, J. Doc, which was earlier in the week, and of course we remember that day and will remember that day forever. The Labor and Energy Show with J. Doc and Krause has a great lineup for our listening audience. We continue, J. Doc, to get heavy downloads on our podcast. I'll remind our listeners and viewers where they can go to do that as the show rolls on.
Absolutely, Joe. We certainly are ecstatic to have a couple actual board members of our Labor and Energy Alliance, Brendan Williams of PBF Energy, who is also a producer on this broadcast, does a fantastic job every week. And of course, Adam Gattuso of Monroe Energy, who is also a board member and has been on the show several times. I'm going to talk about some really cool stuff, but also some really important stuff. You know, lots going on. Real excited about this show.
Opening segment after the break, when we come back, you'll go one-on-one with Adam. Give the audience just an idea on what that conversation is going to be about.
So really cool. So we're going to be talking to Adam, and we touched on this on his previous appearance on the broadcast, about the recent turnaround at the refinery, okay, and what a turnaround is, okay? Thousands of workers, you know, literally, you know, an overtime around the clock, you know, project that takes years to plan. And it's like clockwork, Joe. And we're going to talk about what it is, what the project was, number one. Number two, what it brings to the workforce, what it brings to the community, and certainly the partnership between Monroe and labor. So really cool stuff. And it's like an insider's look, Joe, at what a turnaround is, so that our listeners can really understand. Also, we talk about the, you know, the environmental impact in such a positive way. So it's going to be really cool.
Yeah, and then following your conversation with Adam, as you mentioned, Brendan Williams will be along. Look, it's a critical time. It's a relevant time to bring Brendan Williams into the conversation. We're post Labor Day. We're into September. We're on the doorstep of an election that is in front of us. There is a lot of conversation about what we talk about every week on the Labor and Energy Show. Talk about your agenda with Brendan today.
Yeah, so Brendan, we're going to touch on several things. One is a lot going on with the RFS, okay? Renewable Fuel Standard, RINs, okay, which we've talked about a lot on this program. Still a complicated issue. We're also going to touch on what's going on in California. Okay, and certainly, you know, they're talking about issues where California is going to start limiting fuel. Okay, that's sent to Nevada and Arizona. Okay, and you know, lots going on. They're fuel inventory mandates. Okay, and it's going to jeopardize, you know, the fuel prices in neighboring states like Nevada. And of course, like I said, Arizona, and again the RFS. And we're going to get into some election talk, you know, with Brendan. So really fascinating, like you said, Joe. You know, hey, we're in the home stretch of the election. The Labor and Energy Alliance has been doing action alerts, okay, on a lot of different types of issues, okay. Permitting reform has been one that we've been really working hard at getting going. What that means is for a lot of these energy projects, whether it's a pipeline, whether, you know, it's, you know, a mine, whether, you know, it's a refinery, it takes so long to get permits. Okay. Sometimes up to 10 years. And a lot of these projects are America, United States has such high standards when it comes to the environment, okay, and our refineries and our pipelines and our mines and all those things, that if we could take control of our own projects, we do it so much more environmentally sound than they do overseas. However, the issue is we can't even stop the overseas mining and energy projects from happening because we can't do anything about it here because it takes 10 years to get a permit. So that's a big deal. Okay. We need to be able to compete and really be a lot more environmentally sound than a lot of our overseas comrades, you know, no pun intended. So having said that, we're going to talk about all kinds of things that are so relevant to what's going on now and our upcoming election.
All right, let's get started. Let's get into the Labor and Energy Show with J. Dawkins Krause. We'll pause for 30 seconds.
back on the other side.
The Eastern Atlantic States Regional Council of Carpenters is proud to present skilled union workers, including the workers that build and maintain our energy infrastructure. The safest, best trained, and most productive carpenters in the country are on the job. Whether it's energy from nuclear, wind, coal, natural gas, or offshore wind, the EAS carpenters are ready to provide the construction need of an energy industry our families depend on. If you're interested in a job in construction, visit EASCarpenters.org or follow us on social at EAS Carpenters.
Navigating group Medicare health plans can be overwhelming. Our friends at Labor First, a division of Retiree First, work with plan sponsors to design and manage Medicare plans for union retirees, keeping costs low without compromising member experience. Retirees can keep their retirement stress-free by calling a dedicated advocate who will guide them through their health plans and answer their questions. Preserve the health benefits that retirees deserve at RetireeFirst.com.
Buying a car is a big decision. Makes, models, colors, cost. But soon enough, the government is going to make that decision for you. Delaware and New Jersey are on a collision course to ban the sale of new gas-powered cars. In 2035, you'll have no choice but to buy an electric vehicle in those states. Tell Governor Carney and Governor Murphy to stop the EV mandate and let drivers decide. This program is paid for by Advocacy United. Today's program is pre-recorded.
Portions of tonight's Labor and Energy Special are presented by PBF Energy and supported by members of the Labor Union Community, a collaborative to educate the public and change the narrative.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Labor and Energy Show here on the Jacob Media Network. I'm ecstatic to bring into the program Adam Gattuso of Monroe Energy, Vice President of Public Affairs. Adam, how are you, sir?
Hey, J-Doc, how are you today?
Fantastic. Welcome back to the show. It's always great to have you on. Like I mentioned in the opening with Krause, we're going to have kind of a fun segment, okay, and an insider's look, if you will, on what a turnaround is, okay, in the refinery industry, okay? And your last year's turnaround was just amazing. And the impact of that turnaround, the project itself, the surrounding community, all those things we're going to talk about. But first, if you would, remind our listeners a little bit about yourself and what you do at Monroe.
Sure. And first and foremost, pleasure to be here today. So thanks for the opportunity. Greatly appreciate it. My name's Adam Gattuso at Monroe Energy. I oversee all the communications, the community affairs and government affairs work. And Monroe Energy is a wholly owned subsidiary of Delta Airlines. And we've been owning this plant for roughly 13 years.
And so having said that, okay, let's talk about, for our listeners, what a turnaround is and what's the reason for it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So last year at this time, we were going through our turnaround. Every few years, refineries have to perform major maintenance projects, which are called turnarounds. And I would equate that to think about it like it's a major tune-up of your car motor. Equated to something like that for every listener. And this is where you take either part of the facility or the entire facility off lines. Turnarounds take many years to plan. I would equate it to like a well-choreographed play. When you actually have, which we did last year at this time, 2,000 members of the Philadelphia Building Trades in this facility for over 2 months, you have to make sure that the equipment you need is staged in the right place, people are doing the work that you need done at the right time, and making sure once something is done and completed, that there's a good transition right off to the next project to keep it a seamless process.
What's interesting, when you say turnaround, a lot of people in our industry call it a shutdown, okay? And so a lot of our workers at all of our building trades, and this was coordinated with the Philadelphia, members of the Philadelphia Building Trades, correct?
That is correct. So, yeah, I mean, we couldn't do a turnaround without the highly skilled members of the Philadelphia Building Trades. And I need to say that our team, our USW team members here, our salaried folks here have done a tremendous job putting us in a position to have done that turnaround successfully. A lot of time and energy gets put into it. And I think this one, beyond ones that we've done previously, was kind of the biggest one and the most high profile turnaround that the refinery has seen in many, many decades.
Yeah, and so when we're looking at this, in essence, what you're doing is you're shutting the plant down. Okay. And you're bringing a workforce in there. Okay. To, you know, upgrade, specific areas of the plant. And you can only do that, like you said offline, when you shut the entire plant down. Let me ask you what the, impact is. Okay. Of shutting a plant down. Okay. In other words, when you shut a plant down, it ceases to do business for that time. So I'm going to take a shot at this and say, okay, well, obviously, you have to hit the ground running the moment that switch goes off. Okay. And at that point, in a controlled chaos type situation, everybody hits the ground running, hopefully like a well-oiled machine. Okay. But talk about the impact to the refinery and the business the refinery does. What happens to all that once that switch, for lack of a better term, gets shut off?
Yeah, I think I'm glad you said lack of a better term, because the reality is a lot of planning goes into how do you bring down the refinery in a safe, environmentally friendly manner, right? That's the most important thing. And I think that's the one thing we really want everyone to take away from this segment, is that safety is first and foremost in everything that we do. And we need to make sure that's not only the workforce here, but our surrounding communities, and making sure that we do right by the environment, and shutting the refinery down through the process and bringing it back up is vitally important. But a turnaround like this takes many years to plan. And I think one of the things that is different a little bit about this turnaround than any other turnaround is that we actually replaced our FCC reactor here at the plant. And just for the listeners, FCC stands for fluid catalytic cracking. The unit that we actually had on site here was in operation for roughly 70 years. So very long lifespan. So major capital investment that our company made, and that has a reverberating impact, to the local community. When you bring 2,000 workers to the site, the local community really does benefit because of the economic development, whether it's restaurants, gas stations, parts suppliers, you name it, that have to help make this turnaround go successfully. They actually benefit from it.
So from what I understand, okay, and this is really mind-boggling, okay, because when I'm thinking about this, you're replacing reactors, okay? So, you're disconnecting, your workforce is disconnecting, moving, and then replacing, okay? So this was almost 2.5 to 3 year planning process, right? Okay, how long, I imagine if you're planning something for 3 years, okay? How long did the actual project itself take? I'm going to take a shot and say 2 months.
Yeah, right. You're absolutely right. Right around 2 months is what it took. And that's only because of the planning stages that were involved over those 2.5 to 3 years to make sure, as I said before, it's kind of like a well choreographed play to make sure you know where your people power is at any given day. You're measuring how long jobs should take compared to how long they actually took. You're measuring efficiencies, you're measuring a whole host of things, because when you have 2,000 people on site each and every day, having your schedule slip not only has an impact to the cost of the overall project, but it also impacts when you can bring that facility back up online to start producing the transportation fuels that our region actually needs.
So when you're planning this, okay, and you talk about 2.5, I'm assuming, you know, you're going to put the jobs out for bid and all that, but you start planning before that. But how do you coordinate? Like, in other words, who is involved in the planning? Okay. From the refineries side. Okay. And then from the company side. Okay. And what, you know, once you put, it's sort of like a chicken and an egg theory where, you know, you put it out the bid, and then you, at that point, you know, you're bringing in, are these meetings with contractors, community and refinery executives? Who's all involved in this planning process?
I mean, tons of folks, but we do have folks on site, part of the Monroe team, that are dedicated to doing nothing but planning for the next turnaround because there is so much involved. So, you know, in essence, after you finalize your scope of what a turnaround, your turnaround is going to look like, you then need to identify the specialized contractors that could do the type of work. You know, this isn't like, hey, you're just wiring up like a light socket or something like that, a light, right? I mean, these are very involved, highly technical, highly specialized things that need to be done. So you need to make sure you have the proper skill and manpower to be able to do that. So sometimes there may only be a handful of contractors that are actually capable of doing the work that you need done. So, you know, you would definitely talk to those types of companies. On the community side, right, because it is such an impact to the community, we have those conversations probably a year in advance, talking to the police to make sure traffic flow goes good, talking to neighbors to make sure that they understand that we know it's going to be an inconvenience for a little while, but they have direct numbers to contact us in the event they have questions, right? Because that's important.
And this is 24/7, correct?
That is correct. So we had 2,000 members of the building trades on site each and every day, 24/7 for just about over 2 months.
Okay, so you talked about the partnership that Monroe has with the Philadelphia Building Trades and labor in general. Okay, the importance of that educated, well-trained staff. Okay, you know, during times like this, you know. Talk about that, because look, somebody could get sick, okay, but you know, or you know, somebody may have a family emergency or whatever, and they may not be able, and you have 2,000 members, that could happen, you know, more often than not with at least some of the you know, the workforce. So that importance of being able to replace that person with just as qualified a member, okay? So you don't, you know, miss a beat. Talk about that, you know, when it comes to the partnership that Monroe has with organized labor to keep the ball rolling.
Yeah, it's vitally important. The reality is in order to make this facility run on any given day, we not only need the team members that are here on site, keeping the plant safe, reliable, and being in environmental compliance. But we also need the highly skilled members of Philadelphia Building Trades to do a lot of the maintenance work and project work. So it's all about relationships. It's all about open communication and planning. And I think one of the interesting things that have happened, and I'm going to say it's kind of a sad thing that's happened over the years, is, as you very well know, JDOC, we've lost refineries in the region, right? And when you have a project that requires 2,000 members of the building trades to come in, the bench isn't as deep as it used to be, right? Because we've lost so much work in the region, sometimes these men and women have to go and travel outside the region to get work to keep themselves busy. So when you need 2,000 folks, you really go deep. You have to be in constant communication because you cannot run short on the skilled labor you need to complete your project on time. Because as I said before, when things slip from a schedule perspective, it not only, you know, hurts you on the overall project cost, but you can't bring the facility back up and running and producing the transportation and home heating fuels that the region needs.
And I imagine when you're doing those planning, obviously you got the contractors, you got the union representatives, all there with Monroe Energy executives in the coordination of this, making sure, you know, that in the planning process that you don't run short with guys, that there's never a labor shortage or stoppage, you know, during that time. It's vital. And I know because I've been, as an iron worker, you know, I've been involved in shutdowns over the years, and a lot of our members and a lot of the trades, you know, it's what they do. We look forward to those 2 months because there's a lot of overtime and there's a lot of opportunity. Having said that, we got about 7 minutes left. Let's talk about the actual projects. Okay. You touched on them. Okay. The water tower. Okay. You replaced the reactor, the cooling water tower. You know, a lot of things that, you know, really you mentioned first time in 70 years. So they show a major commitment to the upgrading of the plant. Okay. Elaborate a little more on, you know, if you would first, the newest cooling water tower, and what that's going to bring, including the environmental impact, and also obviously touch again on the reactor.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Really exciting. During this turnaround, we actually installed our second large cooling water tower. We have another one planned a couple of years from now. And to put this into perspective, what it will do, prior to our ownership, each and every day, the refinery was cooled by roughly using 100 million gallons of river water, which we would call non-contact cooling water, so it never comes in contact with any product. It's heat transfer, and it's once through cooling water, so it would cool the plant, kind of go to our advanced treatment plant, and then go back out to the river, and it went out cleaner than what we took in. We have constantly reduced our river water intake. By the time we install our third cooling tower, we'll reduce water intake from 100 million gallons a day prior to our ownership down to just 5 million gallons a day by installing these three new cooling water towers. So it makes the plant more reliable. We're less reliant upon river water. The cooling towers make just the plant better operationally overall. When it comes to the reactor, just one of the things I think, and I know we're a little pressed on time, is one of the things I wanted to mention why that was so interesting. It was the first time that reactor has been placed in 70 years. We had to utilize the second largest crawler crane in the world. When we reserved the crane, it was actually doing work in Indonesia. So it had to be shipped halfway across the world to the port of Wilmington. From there, it was shipped to us in 150 tractor trailer loads. And then another giant crane had actually spent a month building this crane, you know, for roughly 10 total lifts.
So it's kind of historic, really, because that is, you know, that's quite a feat. And I mean, a spectacle to see that, you know, just an awesome spectacle. Before we go, because we only have 2 minutes left, and that's fantastic stuff. This even has national security implications. Talk about that, because it's good for our national security. And of course, we hope our elected officials understand that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know my friend and colleague, Brendan Williams, will be talking about some of the issues that our companies end up working through. But, you know, if you look at what goes on around the world, energy independence is right. You need it for energy security, national security. We are blessed in this region to have a few remaining refineries left to fuel not only the transportation needs, but the home heating oil needs that our citizens want and need, right? And we can do that domestically in the most environmentally friendly way possible, instead of relying upon foreign refiners that don't have to live by the same, you know, environmental regulations that we do. So it's important to have these refineries operational. The more refineries we lose in this nation, the less energy independent we are, and the more pressure I think it puts on our national security.
No question about it. And we've talked about it many times, and our energy security. We all care about the environment. Let's not kid ourselves. But we do it better in America, okay? And they do it overseas. And we can't do anything about them, but we can certainly do something about ourselves. Before we go, community impact, okay? Talk about the community, the tax dollars that are being brought to the region, the surrounding businesses, and not to mention, the fuel that's there for our communities when we're needed.
Sure. Just briefly, I mean, these are major economic drivers for the region. Not only do our school districts and municipalities depend on our tax dollars, but they depend on all that our employees do and contribute in these communities. And when you lose facilities like this, communities end up suffering. Eerily similar to what's happened in the steel industry and other parts of Pennsylvania or coal industry. When those types of industries leave, the towns suffer, jobs suffer, the community suffers overall. So very proud of what we do each and every day. Very happy that we contribute positively to our energy and national security and the welfare of our community overall.
Absolutely. Family sustaining, good paying jobs for thousands of people and great projects. Okay. Safety priority number one. And also with a major eye on the environment, this project itself with the new water cooling tower, great environmental impact. So we really appreciate, you sharing these details with us, Adam, because it's, like I said, an insider's look at what a turnaround is and how it benefits, our local communities, our workforce, our national security, okay, and of course, jobs in America and the environment. So Adam Gattuso, Monroe Energy, we really appreciate you joining the program again. We can't thank you enough, my friend.
Thanks for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. We'll have more from the Labor and Energy Show in just a minute.
What's a Boilermaker? We're the skilled welders, riggers, and craftspeople who will help you grow your competitive edge. We step up when others step back, and we do the job right, on time, on budget, and safely. No drama, just results, every time. We're the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers, and everything we do begins with our bond. Let's get to work together. Visit bestintrade.com.
Tom Lee Hackey has become part of my morning prayers.
I was a full-time nurse, just lifting up a patient.
A tractor trailer came up behind this, pushed us right through.
Right off the bat, you just felt comfortable. I felt somebody had my back.
He says, I'm going to do everything that I can do for you.
You guys are amazing. I love you.
Call Pond Lahaki Giordano, highly rated Philadelphia workers' compensation attorneys.
Neuter Integrated Multicraft Contractors has been a force since 1896. That's right, 1896. And specializes in welding, piping, mechanical, structural, constructability reviews, project management, and rigging design services. For a free consultation, call Neuter at 314-421-7600. Neuter proudly serves petroleum refining, chemical processing, power generation, and alternative energy. Get in touch with Neuter at 314-421-7600.
This program is paid for by Advocacy United. Today's program is pre-recorded.
Portions of tonight's Labor and Energy Special are being supported by the members of the labor union community, including Steamfitters Local 420, Jim Snell, Business Manager, the Eastern Atlantic States Regional Council of Carpenters,
and the United Steelworkers.
Welcome back to the Labor and Energy Show here on the Jacob Media Network. Of course, we want to thank Adam Gattuso of Monroe Energy for being our first guest, and without further ado, I'm ecstatic to bring into the program Brendan Williams of PBF Energy, who is not only a board member on our Labor and Energy Alliance, but also co-produces the show. It does a fantastic job. Yeah, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, happy to be here.
If you would remind our listeners a little bit of what you do at PBF.
Sure. So Brendan Williams, I head up government relations for PBF Energy. We are, kind of a mid-size, mid-cap business, but we're a large business, but we're kind of small in our sector, right? So we have our headquarters in our Parsippany, New Jersey. We have six refineries in five states. Delaware, New Jersey, right across the river from Philly there, Toledo, Ohio, Chalmette, Louisiana, and then two in California. So as in total, our facilities process a little under a million barrels a day. We're considered a mid-sized refiner, but we're obviously small compared to some of the giants in our industry, you know, the Exxons, the Chevrons, et cetera. And we're only about a third the size of some of the largest independent refiners. Independent meaning all they do is refining. They don't produce oil out of the ground. So those, you know, some of the biggest independent refiners are about three times our size. And I handle all the government relations for the company and policy and anything on the communication side that deals with policy too. So whether that be dealing with Congress or administrative agencies or state legislatures, et cetera.
So having said that, we spent obviously a lot of time talking about the RFS on this show. Okay. And we're going to elaborate, you know, a little bit right now, but before we do, okay, can you give our listeners a little bit an idea of what the RFS is? Okay. Cause it's complicated enough.
Yeah. It's certainly not easy. And if anybody really wants a sleeping aid, they can go to EPA's website and get the details of the program, because it certainly is Byzantine in its structure. But trying to dumb it down, the RFS stands for Renewable Fuel Standard. It's a mandate that a certain amount and various specific types of biofuels are blended into the gasoline and diesel supply. The mandate required, and these biofuels have to meet certain greenhouse gas targets. And so the lower carbon biofuels are called the advanced biofuels. That's primarily biodiesel and renewable diesel. So there's a mandate specifically for that. And then there's a bigger mandate. You can use those advanced biofuels for the bigger mandate, but you can also use ethanol, and that happens to be the biggest portion of the mandate, about 15 billion gallons, which is more than 10% of the gasoline demand. So the problem comes, so that's the RFS in a nutshell. The problem is refiners are responsible for showing fuel is blended into, biofuel is blended into what makes it to your gas tank. The problem is when it comes to gasoline and ethanol, most independent refiners like us are not in the part of the supply chain where you can actually physically blend ethanol into gasoline. You can only do that at those terminals where all the fuel goes into the trucks and then it's delivered to your local gas station, because you can't ship ethanol in a pipeline. So refiners are on the hook for showing compliance, even though they don't control the portion of the supply chain where you can mix this stuff into. So EPA created this basically upside down cap and trade program, where it's a system of credit. So the people who can blend the fuel get credits. Our refiners have to buy them. If you're a company that's in every part of the supply chain, like some of the bigger oil companies, and you actually have more blending capabilities than refining capabilities, you have more of these credits than you need. If you're an independent refiner like ourselves, then you're reliant on buying these credits off the market. And, you know, quick background, which, you know, all the listeners are more than familiar with at this point, but that whole system created a problem where the cost of the credits got, you know, they were supposed to be pennies. They got so high at one point, they did contribute to some refinery bankruptcies and some refinery closures. They're still historically high, but they've come down from where they were the last couple of years. But independent refiners are still spending more on these credits than all operating costs combined. It's an issue that, you know, kind of ebbs and flows in terms of the attention it gets based on where the credit prices are, but certainly one that's not going away and still has significant implications for the refining sector in the years ahead.
So, you know, having said that, where do we stand now with the RFS? What's the status? Okay, have refiners weathered the storm when it comes to, you know, the cost of RINs? I mean, you mentioned obviously, you know, the prices have been high. Where are we at now?
Yeah, sure. So if you go back right before 2020, so right before the pandemic, 2019, that year, I think the price of RINs averaged 15 cents. And then because of a series of policy shifts coupled with the demand destruction in COVID, those prices skyrocketed to $2 at one point, and then they were around $1.50 for a while. Did refiners weather the storm? Some barely did, some didn't. Even before that time period, you had a refinery out west closed down because of the cost of these credits. It did transition into making renewable diesel, but it made, you know, in doing so, it made 70% less fuel with only about 10% of the workforce. And Philadelphia Energy Solutions, before, you know, that plant had an incident that resulted in it being shut down permanently, led to the plant going bankrupt twice. And as you know, couldn't get anybody to reopen it as a refinery after the fire. We had to shut down some capacity, essentially half of Paulsboro during the pandemic. Most of that was because of the pandemic, but the cost of the credits were so high at the time, they certainly contributed to it. There are still some big units there that are still down, and we brought some of it back when fuel demand rebounded, but there are still some down that, you know, were we to bring them back, we would incur this big cost. So it certainly did impact the refining sector. Some folks did weather the storm. We did lose, unfortunately, about 2 million barrels a day of refining capacity in the pandemic. Some of it did come back recently, but it's primarily in the Gulf and for bigger facilities that are more for export. Certainly, unfortunately, we didn't have, you know, we've been, as Adam noted on the last segment, losing refineries on the East Coast as opposed to gaining them. But where that puts us now is the credits were really high. And one of the things I mentioned, independent refiners can't control where ethanol is blended because we're not in that part of the supply chain. Some of us do have equipment that we could transition to make a product called renewable diesel. And that's basically taking a vegetable oil or used cooking oil and you make a diesel fuel. It's indistinguishable from petroleum diesel. It does require a lot of subsidization, tax credits, the RFS credits you actually need for that fuel. But you did have a lot of independent refiners start getting into renewable diesel. That, as I mentioned, that fuel can also be used for the ethanol mandate. So that actually did help bring credit prices down a lot from where they were at $1.50. And we see that continuing. But they're still historically expensive. And we're facing an inflection point in policy that, you know, could determine where the credit prices go, and also some tax policies that could impact renewable diesel itself.
I was going to say, you talk about, you know, getting into the renewable diesel business. Okay, my understanding is that the Treasury Department is working on guidance to implement some of the Inflation Reduction Act tax credits. What this guidance ends up looking like could have a significant impact on not only renewable diesel, but also RIN prices that the refiners face. Can you explain this to our listeners a little bit? Talk about the implications associated with the tax credit guidance and how that relates to, you know, the RFS program.
Yeah, no, definitely. So as I mentioned, you need to, because of the cost to produce, you need to actually subsidize renewable diesel to make it economic for petroleum diesel. And the subsidies are, it's kind of a stack of various subsidies. There's a dollar per gallon tax credit that you get right now. The RIN actually is needed for renewable diesel. We'd argue you don't need it for ethanol. It's a whole other conversation we've had before. And then the California Low Carbon Fuel Standard. All those things together, though, you know, are, you need about $4 to $5 per gallon of subsidies to make this stuff economic. And if any of those subsidies isn't there, then one of the other ones has to make up the gap in order to make it economic. And so where that comes to the tax credit, biodiesel and renewable diesel, and this is actually an interesting issue where the biofuel sector and refining sector are aligned, particularly since refiners are more and more the advanced biofuel industry as more and more folks get into renewable diesel. But right now, everybody's getting $1 per gallon tax credit. The Inflation Reduction Act has there was a bunch of different fuel tax credits, and it said, hey, let's transition these all into one technology neutral tax credit based on carbon intensity. So whatever your carbon score is determines whether you get a dollar or whether you get zero. And so the law was passed, obviously, but Treasury has to implement guidance that says, okay, here's how we're going to figure out how these different fuels score from a carbon intensity basis. And if, depending on what the Treasury says, determines the extent of the tax credit renewable diesel producers do or do not get. And so if a lot of people lose value in the tax credit when this transition happens, then one of the other subsidies has to actually get more expensive to make renewable diesel economic. And that, you know, is, you know, most likely going to have to be the RIN because, you know, the California Low Carbon Fuel Standard isn't changing yet. They are talking about changing it. But that, you know, that has implications for the refining sector. So while you need the RIN to help incentivize renewable diesel, as I mentioned, the biggest part of the problem with the ethanol mandate, with the RFS, is that you pay really expensive credit prices for blending ethanol into the fuel supply that essentially would have gotten blended anyway. And if the price of, because of the crazy system, if the price of a RIN for one type of fuel goes up, they essentially all go up. So depending if this tax guidance comes out and a lot of renewable diesel and biodiesel producers are unable to claim the value they claim now, we could certainly see RINs on the rise again. And that's another example of how the program still operates as somewhat of a sort of Damocles over the head of independent refiners. And in addition to the tax credit, the law actually had a calendar of volumes that they said EPA should try to hit up until 2022. After 2022, the law handed the RFS program over to EPA and it said, hey, you guys have to figure out how to set this. And it didn't give them a lot of guidance. It gave them a lot of leeway. So they set a 3-year period that goes through next year. And so sometime either later this year or first half of next year, EPA actually has to propose what the mandate is going to look like for the next 3 years. So the combination of what happens with the tax credit guidance from Treasury on the IRA, coupled with where EPA decides to go with the volumes of mandates, will have a significant impact on RIN pricing. And then, you know, what impact those RIN prices will or won't have on independent refiners.
So we have an election coming up, okay? And we're talking about all this. What do you think will happen with all this? Okay, and you know, the impact on refiners, okay, in the next administration, regardless of who wins in November.
Yeah, one of the things that's interesting about this issue is, you know, in the hyper political times we live on, this is actually not really a partisan issue. It tends to be more geographic. And so folks in the Midwest just want continuous expanding of the biofuel mandates. Even under the current structure, we've tried to say, hey, you can actually mandate the fuel in a way that doesn't put refineries or refining jobs at risk. But it's such a complex program, it's been challenging. And so you have a lot of folks in the Midwest that will tend to listen. And it doesn't matter what party they are. There's really no difference between a conservative like Chuck Grassley and a liberal like Tammy Baldwin when it comes to the RFS and biofuel policy. And then you obviously have members who have independent refineries in their districts, and independent refineries have a lot of union jobs. So Senator Casey in Pennsylvania, Senator Coons, obviously in Delaware, who have introduced bills to control the cost of RINs. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic. I think no matter who wins, a lot of the policy deliberations don't change too much, but either administration is going to have to set the volumes moving forward. And our message is, you know, don't advance the program in a way that puts more independent refiners at risk, because, you know, what we're seeing in California is refineries going away. And even with all their mandates and programs, you don't have enough biofuel to, you know, to plug the gap there. And, you know, EVs obviously aren't catching on like I think a lot of the folks pushing aggressive government mandates intended.
Well, you mentioned California, okay? And there's been a lot of news about legislative deliberations to create a fuel inventory mandate, okay? We only have a few minutes, but I want to run through this, because explain to us and our listeners what is being debated and the status of it.
Sure. Real quick background. So California has a lot of really aggressive mandates. They obviously are also looking to ban the sale of new internal combustion engines by 2035.
They're mandating everything.
Yeah, without getting into all the details, in addition to disincentivizing refining in the state, these mandates add about $1.30 per gallon to what you're paying at the pump.
Of course.
So in this environment, what happened is you've seen refineries close. You saw two refineries in Northern California close and transition to renewable diesel. But like with the other plant I mentioned, they make 70% less fuel and 10% of the workforce. And they're making no gasoline. When you refine petroleum, you make gasoline, diesel, jet fuel. So this has kind of left the state, you know, just barely balanced. And if anything happens, they're now dependent on imports to actually supply the market. So all of these factors came together and created price spikes in California. They, you know, gas is normally $1.30 more than where it is because of the cost of these mandates that I mentioned. You had some price spikes, and you know that led the governor to to try and figure out what should we do to address these things. But rather than revisit some of the flawed policies, they passed a law that requires the California Energy Commission to do a fuel transportation assessment. And then it actually has the authority to potentially cap profits for refiners and other recommendations. In other recommendations, one of the things CEC said is, well, one thing that could be done is this minimum gasoline inventory requirement. And if you read the report, I would say CEC actually said the cons outweighed the pros. But the governor decided this is what he wanted to advance. And at the end of the legislative session, really tried to push this through. It did not go anywhere because of the timing of the California legislative session, but a special session has convened where this is going to be considered. Go ahead, Jada. You got a question.
I'm just saying, okay, you know, I'm not surprised that people are thinking the inventory mandate is a bad idea. Didn't we have a Northeast gasoline reserve at one point?
Yeah, we did. And what's different? Well, first of all, we had that. That was like the government owned and operated it and bought fuel and put it in tanks. But we never used it. And Congress actually liquidated it. The problem with California is it wants to mandate refiners keep a certain amount of minimum inventory. But refiners are using all the tanks they have right now, and they're not going to let you build anything in California. And you need different tanks for different components of fuel, for gasoline blending. So if you mandate refiners carry minimum inventory and you don't have the tankage or space for it, then you know refiners could be left in a situation where they're forced to cut back production because they need to use a lot of the tanks they use to make gasoline on a regular basis.
And as a result, you have governors from the surrounding states, okay, weighing in on that from Arizona and Nevada. Talk about that.
Yeah, no. So Nevada gets probably 65% of its fuel from California refineries. Arizona is about 40%. And so one of the reasons they see higher costs is because of these California regulations. And they've started to realize, they read the California Energy Commission fuel assessment, and they said, hey, this could have unintended consequences of actually limiting fuel supply at a time when we need more fuel supplies. And this has implications for Nevada and Arizona. So the ramification, and you have, I think it's very significant. You have the Democratic governor of Arizona on a letter with the Republican governor of Nevada echoing the same concern. So we really hope the legislature and the governor takes note of that and hits the pause button on this thing, because it could have some significant adverse implications for consumers. And refineries, you know, we don't need more refineries closing in California. We've already seen a lot of lost jobs. Berkeley did a study that said a lot of the folks that lost their jobs in the closures we had haven't been able to get ones that were as good.
So we have about a minute left, but I want to just get this in. A lot of these California policies are being done to phase out fossil fuels and assume that alternatives are both cheaper and available. But you and I both know that is not really the case. Talk about that if you would.
Well, yeah. So, you know, obviously you have these states trying to mandate that you can only buy electric vehicles, but as we've seen, they're not really catching on. The percentage of consumer acceptance is still relatively small compared to the mandates. What's fascinating is there is this assumption it's going to be cheaper and available. Well, keeping the lights on now. So if you make all the cars electric, what's that going to do? And the Energy Information Administration just noted that we're seeing skyrocketing electricity rates across the nation. And California is where they see some of the highest rates. And so I did quick math on the back of the envelope. Even with the gas prices in California, you know, recently, which again are a dollar higher than everywhere else in the nation, it's just about on par to charge an electric vehicle and fill up your gas tank. So in making gasoline more expensive, so you're just making everything more expensive with these mandates, particularly when you couple them with mandates on the electricity sector that are driving electricity prices up. And if you can't keep the lights on, car's not getting anywhere anyway.
Exactly. And these mandates drive me crazy, okay, for a million different reasons. Certainly you and I have talked about it 1,000 times, and that discussion will continue, to happen, okay? We've talked, we're right to constantly dealing with the EV mandate situations. Do I support electric vehicles? Yes. Do I support electric vehicle mandates? Absolutely not. And educating the public is so important. Brendan Williams, PBF Energy, Head of Government Relations, thanks so much for joining us on the broadcast, my friend.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
You got it. We'll have more from the Labor and Energy Show in just a minute.
The Eastern Atlantic States Regional Council of Carpenters is proud to present skilled union workers, including the workers that build and maintain our energy infrastructure. The safest, best trained, and most productive carpenters in the country are on the job. Whether it's energy from nuclear, wind, coal, natural gas, or offshore wind, the EAS carpenters are ready to provide the construction need of an energy industry our families depend on. If you're interested in a job in construction, visit EASCarpenters.org or follow us on social at EAS Carpenters.
Neuter Integrated Multicraft Contractors has been a force since 1896. That's right, 1896. And specializes in welding, piping, mechanical, structural, constructability reviews, project management, and rigging design services. For a free consultation, call Neuter at 314-421-7600. Neuter proudly serves petroleum refining, chemical processing, power generation, and alternative energy. Get in touch with Neuter at 314-421-7600.
Can you afford a brand new electric car or a charging station for your home? Want to spend your days waiting in line at a public charging station? Well, buckle up. Delaware and New Jersey are planning to ban the sale of gas-powered cars by 2035. Most drivers can't afford it, don't need it, and don't want it. Tell Governor Carney and Governor Murphy to stop the EV mandate and let drivers decide.
This program is paid for by Advocacy United. Today's program is pre-recorded.
Portions of tonight's Labor and Energy Special are presented by PBF Energy and supported by members of the labor union community, a collaborative to educate the public and change the narrative.
And back here on the Labor and Energy Show, Jay Doc, great conversation today. We went a little bit long, so we only have about 90 seconds before we wrap everything up. And I still want to tell people how they can download the podcast. And listening to that segment with Brendan Williams, boy, I can't even imagine a fuel mandate on top of an electric vehicle mandate and the ramifications of what that would mean to all of us, even here on the East Coast.
Well, Joe, you talk about educating the public, right? How many people really know this stuff is going on and really understand it, let alone a lot of our policymakers, okay? These are complicated issues, but, you talk about fuel mandates, electric vehicle mandates, okay? All coming from California, okay? Because they got and a lot of these policies aren't even supported by the legislature out there. We've had all kinds of conversations. They handle them in the courts. So I want to thank Brendan Williams for having that discussion, no question. Whenever you hear the word mandate, okay, you better get yourself educated, okay? And we're in the end. You know what I mean? Certainly it's important. And, of course, we want to thank Adam Gattuso for the insider's look at the shutdown, the refinery shutdown. Just fascinating.
Good stuff, J-Doc. If you want to listen to this podcast or any of the previous shows on the Labor and Energy Show, and we've had so many great shows, J-Doc, over our tenure to date, they really, really are worth listening to. And we're feeling it because we're starting to get reach outs and notifications and guest requests from not only around the country, but from around the world. So our word is getting out there. Good stuff by you. That's going to do it for this edition of the Labor and Energy Show with J-Doc and Krause. Go to Apple or Spotify, search the words, the Labor and Energy Show, and you can listen to today's broadcast. Until next time, on behalf of J-Doc, I'm Joe Krause. See you next time, everybody.
Thanks for listening to tonight's Labor and Energy Special. You can help. Call your congressperson and join the movement to push back on RINs.
This program is paid for by Advocacy United. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Advocacy United or its guests and do not reflect the views of WPHT or Odyssey. Today's program is pre-recorded.
So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Aero. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Aero. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This holiday season, choose gifts that feel thoughtful and practical with Omaha Steaks. Whether you're hosting or gifting, they deliver the world's best steak experience, and it makes you look like you planned way ahead. They've got USDA-certified tender steaks, juicy burgers, comfort meals, and tons more. Gifting Omaha Steaks is honestly one of the easiest wins. Everything arrives beautifully packaged, super convenient, and the quality is unbelievable. Their filet mignons are some of the most tender I've ever had. And the variety means you can personalize every gift. Plus, orders placed by 6 p.m. Eastern ship same day. And everything is backed by their 100% guarantee. It's holiday gifting made simple. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Sizzle All the Way sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code T-BONE at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, code T-BONE.